The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams. Hi, guys. Welcome to another episode of the IMG Roadmap Podcast. Today's guest is probably the first general surgeon that I've brought on the show. I don't remember, but I don't think we've had a general surgeon come on before. I've received tons of messages on Instagram to interview a general surgeon, and here we go. I've invited Dr. Burke Parker to come on the show today and answer some questions that I know you all have and you've been pressing for me to answer. How about we just direct it to him? Welcome to the show, Dr. Parker. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
All right. I'm glad you're here. So we'll just get right into it. Can you tell us what makes you an IMG? What medical school did you graduate from?
Yeah, I went to St. Matthew's University, which was in Belize at the time. It's now in the Cayman Islands. But I was in like a small island off of the coast of Belize, Ambergris Key.
Wow, that sounds like a really nice place, I would assume.
It's a good vacation spot and a diving spot, a really popular diving spot. So it was nice, but you know,
yeah,
it's very small. So right. Yeah. For two years I was there. So it's a pretty small place for 2 years. So,
anyway. Right. I understand that. I went to a small island too. So I share in that grievance. So just some more things that we want to know is, as a person, and at first, I should probably let everybody know that you are a U.S. IMG, meaning you're a U.S. person, resident, yes, citizen that went to the island to study. But, you know, when it comes to what you ended up, what you practice currently, which is a lot of general surgery and trauma, we don't get a lot of feedback from IMGs that have matched into the specialty. And so the perception is general surgery is usually more competitive compared to the primary care specialties. And we really want to just kind of hear from you. If you want to just take us back and tell us a little bit more about your story and how you ended up in general surgery.
I always wanted to do surgery. Like, that's the only reason I went to medical school. And so I kind of had my sights set on that. And I did enough research to realize that I was definitely at a disadvantage going to a Caribbean school, especially one that was like not well known. I probably should have done a lot more research before I went to school, before I picked one. But, you know, at the time, yeah, I just picked that school and went. I only applied to one Caribbean school. And this is like 1998 or 99. And I type in Google. I'm not even sure if it was Google back then. It was probably something, Alta Vista or something like that, search engine. And, you know, Caribbean Medical School. And the first one that popped up, like, I literally just sent an application off because I was applying to U.S. schools too. And then when I didn't get into the U.S. schools, I got into that one. I had a family friend who was a physician who was from India, actually, but he was a oncologist. I talked to him about it. And he said, you know, just go where you can get in and where you can take the USMLEs and get U.S. residency. And so I made sure that basically we could do all that at St. Matthew's. And so that's what I did. So I had my sights set on general surgery, and I knew that I had to do really well on step one. And it seemed to be the one thing that I needed to do. So I really focused a lot on that. During my classes, I saved all my notes. I kind of tried to look forward at step one while I was doing those classes in the first 2 years. And then I actually ended up taking a lot, like 8 months off to study for step one. And I did that because I did about 4 months, and then I didn't like my scores that I was getting, and I took a totally different route. There was a couple different ways to study for step one at that time, and I went one way and I didn't like it. And then so I went back and almost like revamped the whole thing and did the study like over in a different way for another like 4 months. And so ended up taking like 8 months off for it, and I did fairly well. Like, I got a 90th percentile, which, you know, the number is like 220 back then, but now it's not the same. But that was good enough to at least get your foot in the door and get some interviews. I think I got like 20 interviews or so. So that was really good. I didn't get anything that was, you know, I didn't get a Harvard or Stanford or anything like that, but there's plenty of programs out there that are okay taking IMGs as long as you do well on step one. Now, I know that it's different now. I think probably they're just going to look at step two personally and look at those scores of step two. And since everything's pass fail in step one now, but so you're essentially in the same boat.
Right. Yeah.
So that's, so that I did that. And then I actually didn't match. I should have matched. I was kind of foolish, honestly. I had a small program in Baltimore that told me that they would match me because I did my rotations there. And it was a smaller program, and I had interviewed at bigger programs and I wanted a big one because I thought I was better than I was probably. And so I didn't list them. I didn't rank them, which is, you know, just out of your mind, stupid. And then I didn't match at any of the other ones, but I had interviewed at Henry Ford and they had a prelim position available. So I contacted them and said, hey, I interviewed with you guys. I see you have a prelim. You know, would you take me? And so they actually ended up taking me there. So, and I ended up getting a better program, honestly, than I would have if I did list them. So I guess in the end it was okay, but I would not recommend doing that. That was the wrong way of doing that. And that caused a lot of stress. So
take what you can get. I would definitely imagine the stress of that moment of opening that envelope or that email and realizing you did not match between that time and getting into Henry Ford. I'm sure that was a very difficult season. Would you agree?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was horrible working for that long at something and then not getting it. And then, and being like, well, you might even not match or not get a program at all. I mean, I do have friends that never got a residency program. So it's really tough coming from those schools. If you don't do well, you know, if you don't play the game how they want you to play the game, you're like, they won't let you in the game, you know? It's crazy. So it's scary.
Looking back, would you go back to Caribbean school?
If I was to go now, I would go to St. George, possibly Ross, possibly AUC. And those are the only ones I would go to. I would try my best to go to St. George. And a lot of people ask me this all the time. And I think for me, the answer is that those programs or those schools are known entities within the program directors of all the programs. And so that is the main issue. And because in residency, I don't know if you did this in residency. I was on when you're interviewing students, right?
Right.
The program, when you're selecting students, there's a panel of people, and obviously the program director, the chairman, you know.
Right, the residency selection committee.
Yeah. So the committee, So, and there's also residents on that. And I was on that for like four out of my 5 years. And so I saw how that kind of happened and how they made their decisions and things like that. And they would take those students from St. George, Ross, and AUC at the time because they had other students that were residents at their programs and they did okay. And they knew what kind of student they were getting. And so when they would get applications from other schools that were kind of like no-name schools and they didn't, or they hadn't had anyone from that school before, they were very hesitant to interview them, especially rank them. And so in my mind, that's the main thing. Do these program directors know your school? Have they had a successful student from your school before or not? Because if they haven't, then even if you do really well on the steps, they may kind of be like, we don't know what we're going to get, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I agree with that too. I've seen that play itself out in several different programs and specialties too, because you'll find most IMGs came from one of those, what they call the big four schools that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of that, they have more graduates. And that means those people went through these different programs. And so familiarity goes a long way in residency selection because they know what they're getting, like you said. They've seen students work hard. They know that these schools produce good students and residents and eventual doctors. But doesn't mean if you're listening and you're in a small school, doesn't mean you would not match. It just makes it a lot easier when you have alumni that's doing really well at any program that you're potentially targeting when you apply. So let's ask you some more questions. In your opinion, when particularly going back and working with your residency selection committee, did you notice a difference between selection of IMGs that were non-US IMGs versus US IMGs? So IMGs that required visas versus none. Any tips there as far as how to maneuver that application process if you require a visa versus if you don't? Is general surgery friendly to visa applicants or not?
Well, so my program did take some students with visas. They were generally definitely the cream of the crop. Like they got 99 or whatever on their steps. They had, they were in a good school in whatever country they came from. They had really great recommendations and all that stuff. And so we did have a few. And matter of fact, one of my good friends was from India. He was one of them. Now he's a pediatric cardiac surgeon. So, I mean, it's definitely, they do it. I think talking with a lot of other attendings now and some residents and things like that around the country, I think there's definitely certain schools that will do that and certain schools that don't. I mean, I'm sorry, programs, residency programs that will do that and certain programs that don't. So I'm kind of out of touch of which programs those kind of are now, but right. At the time I was really in tune with that, and that those are the programs that I applied to, and I think that's why I got a lot of interviews.
Yeah, definitely 20 interviews. That's a lot of interviews, especially for applying into general surgery. Let's talk a little bit more about the general surgery application process, especially now as an attending and you're looking back. You know, usually the ERAS applications call for letters of recommendation, of course, a personal statement, a CV. What are some things that you think make a student stand out? So if there is a student right now listening to us talking and they're like, man, I want to be a surgeon and I want to be like Dr. Parker, what are you recommending for them to start doing so as to increase their likelihood of finding a program or being seen by a general surgery program when they do apply?
Well, I mean, first of all, like when I was on that committee, it was kind of a little bit pathetic because they just scored everybody by number one, their step score, number two, their school, and then like any letters of recommendation that they had, which were personal, like any of the committee members personally knew. And so that is really, really tough when you're like, oh, I'm an outsider and I don't know anybody there and stuff like that. So honestly, the thing that I drill into everybody is like, you have to do well on these steps. And I guess it's debatable whether they're going to take step two as their kind of their next, you know, number one thing that they look at. But in my mind, like that's what's going to happen. Now the letters, not the letters, like your personal, you know, your personal letter and things like that. I think you really have to show the committee why you want to do this. Like right. What in your life, not just like, I want to help people. Like that's terrible. Everybody wants to help people. Who cares? But is something in your life like driving you to do this? Because what they want to know is residency is hard, right? And you're at some point, you're going to want to quit. No question. I think everybody has that moment, at least a moment. Mine was like 4 years. Every day. You know? And so they need to know what is going to drive you to not quit and stay with their program, because they need people, they need butts in the seats. They need people, they need workers. Yeah. And if they have somebody drop out or have a problem or they have to fire them, that's a disaster for them, because they don't have enough residents to see their patients.
Correct.
Right? So that is for my program, they were super busy. It was a 900 bed hospital. And so they're like, is this kid going to hang in with us for 5 years, you right. know? And so if it's like, I like to help people, they're like, oh, good Lord, that's, you know, that's going nowhere.
Right.
So I think that's one. I think the other thing I kind of talk about, like being inside, we're outsiders and trying to get on the inside. How are you going to get on the inside? Like you got to know people. You got to go find people and then shadow them, you know, if that's like, if you're a college student or what, a high school, whatever, if you can do that, if you can do research with someone, but somebody that's important to the program, not just somebody like, I always get a lot of like, oh, I'm going to do research with such and such. He's doing a gene study on mice. Well, what residency do you want to do? I want to do like, what, plastic surgery? Like, who cares? You know, like that guy doesn't know plastic surgeons.
Right.
You know, so I think that's one thing that I see a lot is kids trying to do research or trying to do the right thing, get on the inside, but they're not quite hitting the mark.
Right.
So I would try to find somebody in the program that can give you a recommendation that is very, very close to the program or the program director or the Department of Surgery chairman or whoever it is. That way it's a direct link and not like, oh, we have this guy and he's off campus and he does, you know, research for blah, 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 and the surgery chairman doesn't know him. And maybe he doesn't even like him. You have no idea, right?
Right.
So I think that's one of the best ways as like an outsider is you can kind of crack in the insider club.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hearing a lot of, you know, you're saying IMGs need to target their applications and they need to understand what's important and what would offer them the upper hand versus what wouldn't, which a lot of times, a lot of this information is on the internet. You know, I'm sure if an IMG was to, if you're looking to find out, you know, who is the chair of surgery at whatever institution that's in your state, you can probably very easily find that information on Google or through American College of Surgery. You can go on that website and find out all the board certified physicians in your state. And then by virtue of that, start looking to see what ranks that they may hold at whatever hospitals that they're affiliated with. And I think, you know, a lot of this is just, it's so easy that sometimes we miss the mark as IMGs because we're thinking we must know these people, like they must be our uncles or something before we can reach out for opportunity. But I really believe in the power of like asking for what you want and cold emailing, cold calling their assistants in their offices. It's the same hustle, just like with every other thing, every other business in this world. You can basically network your way by going to a networking event or calling people and asking for opportunities. So why not in medicine? Mm-hmm. So I think I really like that you're telling us, you know, and all the listeners, how it's so easy to really network and get in. But sometimes you hear so many no's because you're going to ask so many people, but you never know who's going to give you that one opportunity.
Yeah. It's not easy, but it's doable, right?
Right.
I think that's the main difference is it's not easy and you're going to get a lot of no's and you're going to feel stupid or whatever, but somebody, like you said, somebody is going to say yes. And, you know, especially if you can do any rotations in the States, like that, obviously that helps a lot. And if you're going to do rotations, do it at a place where you have a chance of getting a residency. Because, you know, that's basically what happened is that I did a rotation, my third year general surgery rotation with a program. They had 5 residents a year. And I was like, I came in there and I was like, I want to do surgery. I want to do general surgery, and I'm going to do the best I can possibly do. And I told everybody that there, and they were interested. Like, so as a surgery resident, when you have rotators or, you know, with students, like most people are not interested in surgery because it's painful and it it's long hours, it's early in the morning and blah, 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 whatever. And so in what I saw when I was a resident is most students would come in there to that rotation and go like, oh my God, I've been dreading this rotation and oh, I've heard such bad things about it and it's so hard and this and that. And you're like, I don't really want to work with you anyway. so then, you know, you're like, get out of here, kid. Like, whatever. I don't want to teach you anything because you don't
want to learn.
You're just sitting here waiting to go to your whatever, you know, like your rotation that you want to go into, which is okay. But then, like, if you're interested in general surgery, it kind of gives you a leg up because you can go in there and be like, hi, I want to do surgery. I'm going to do best I can possibly do. Please tell me if I can help in any way, blah, blah, and just torture everybody like that, you know, everybody, all the residents. And you can go from the ground up and you can talk to the interns at first and make, you know, friends with the interns and then the chief residents or whatever, third years and this and that. And pretty soon, you know, obviously you'll be talking to attendings and cases with attendings and stuff like that. And tell everybody, just like, I want to do surgery, blah, blah, blah. And pretty soon they'll be like, oh, okay, well, great. Let's do something. You want to do a research project? Yes. Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how much we can get when we actually tell people what we want. And I feel like sometimes as students, particularly for me, I also went to a Caribbean school. And so when I was rotating through, I had like a huge case of imposter syndrome, just feeling like I just didn't, like, who am I, right? To tell people what I want. But looking back, that was probably the biggest disservice I ever did. I gave myself. And I think that anybody coming up now should take your advice and literally start telling people what you want. I really believe if you tell people what you want, you're going to get it, because at some point nobody wants to hear it anymore and they're just going to start working in your favor. So, you know, but I mean, you have to have a good attitude, good character, be charismatic, be hardworking. People attending physicians and senior residents and programs and coordinators, they like to know that once the IMG, those of you listening, when you come in, they like to know that you're going to do the work. And that they wouldn't have to run after you trying to get you to do stuff. Like, you're going to be taking initiative. You're going to be showing up. You're going to be the one that's innovative and looking to improve even without reproach. So if you have that kind of a character and you let that shine even while you're a medical student, you make yourself attractive to those programs.
Yeah, for sure.
So technically, talking about it is just not about saying it and hoping, oh, Dr. Loom said this, it's just going to come to me. No. I'm saying you're talking and your actions are showing what you want. You're just not talking about it, but you're also showing them how much of an asset you would be for that program if they kept you. Because I'm sure every program wants to have that resident who doesn't complain about call, you know? Yeah. They want to have that resident who's willing to cover for their colleagues when they're gone. I'm not saying kill yourself or anything like that, or, you know, not to make fun of like physician stressors, but, you know, if you can be a person that's available, teachable, you're willing to show that you're there to do the work, I think you can attract a lot of these programs to invite you for interview at least. So I really like that you pointed that out. I think that's a really strong point, especially for those of us that go to school in the Caribbean and get the opportunity to rotate in the States. That's our biggest asset, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, what one thing you said, it brought to mind that now when I look back on everything and not just med school and residency and stuff like that, like so much of what we do in the world or why we get what we want or get opportunities or whatever is if somebody likes you, right? So, and it's just a, kind of a almost stupidly simple, but, you know, be likable. Does that make, like when you get there, you know, the whole, you said imposter syndrome and you have, and I had the same thing and I go there. So, I get in this program. I'm from this no-name Caribbean school. I did pretty good on the steps, but I didn't do 99, which is what some of my friends did. And I get to this program, and the first day, I'm a prelim, and I'm not like a categorical resident. The categorical residents are from University of Michigan, you know, like, because it was all Michigan, and there was a lot of residents from Michigan. So they had like University of Michigan residents, or medical students there, Wayne State University, which is in Detroit there and stuff. And so I was like, oh my God, like I totally do not belong here. And, you know, they were even passing like our textbooks out the first day and all that stuff. And I was like, I don't know if I get one of these, like I'm just a prelim. So they're like, yeah, you're in the program. Here, you know, it felt so bad. I'm like, oh my God, I don't belong here. But, you know, you can get in the mindset of like, oh, I don't belong, and kind of be very introverted and, you know, not talk to people and be your normal, likable self. And I see that a lot in students and residents too. And I think you just got to get out there and be like, okay, I'm here. I'll just pretend that I don't have this imposter syndrome on the inside.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go make friends and I'm going to be likable and I'm just going to be myself. You know, I think that goes a long way. Because in residency too, like residency is a job and your colleagues, your other residents, if it's a second year, third, fourth year, like they want interns that they want to hang out with. because you're going to hang out with them. You're going to spend a lot of time together. So if I don't like you because you're just a jerk, who cares if you're super smart or you got a crazy score or whatever?
Yeah.
Then I'm not going to vote for you, you know?
Right, right, right. I think you're right. That's the bottom line is likability. And that's something that, you know, I help to coach IMGs and I usually teach them about likability because it's such an easy concept, but it's really how you win friends and really how you influence other people. You know, clearly, I mean, you would know about likability. I was going through your Instagram the other day and I was like, you know, this guy is charismatic. Like clearly you can see by the number of followers that this person gets, there's just certain things that character attracts to people, whether it's in medicine or outside of medicine. There has to be some kind of likability factor there. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
All right. So we have a few more questions before we let you go. We want to know specifically, you talked about letters. You touched on the personal statement, what should go in it, and what you recommend programs to be looking at, primarily scores. What's your opinion on observerships? So for, say, medical students that graduated and maybe had a gap year, do you recommend that they fill that up with an observership? In surgery, is that considered strong? Because for medicine, it is. But, you know, surgery, I would assume being more of a work of the hands, are observerships valued as much? Or is a research year better? What would you recommend someone does with that kind of a gap year?
Personally, I think it's all dependent upon who you're doing it with and how they are connected with a program that you can actually match into. If the research is the chairman of surgery, do it with him. Right. If the observership is with the chairman of surgery or the program director or whatever, do it with them. If it's with somebody not connected to the program, don't do it. You're wasting your time. You know, right. I mean, I've had some students come for like a day or a couple days and watch here and there, and I am not connected to any programs anymore. And that's fine. Like you want to check it out and stuff like that, but I wouldn't do anything of, you know, that's really time consuming, that's not connected to a program that you want, that you can get into. Not that you want, like I wanted to go to Harvard or something like that, but I couldn't. So it was a waste of time for me to try to do anything like that. So.
Right. Right. So applying strategy and just kind of going where you probably have a higher chance of matching is really the most one of the strategic things that an MG can do. Yeah. Because you want to be liked by the people that actually have a higher likelihood of liking you.
Yes. Right? Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, you
know, and this is, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this or not, but go with somebody. If you can find someone that is similar to you, right, in the program, go with them. Like maybe there's someone that's from the same country as you.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah.
Like I would do that. Like use everything. You've got to use all of it.
Yes. You know? And like, I usually
people
give that
like others that are similar to themselves, even though there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world right now, which that's like innate.
Yes.
You know, just that's how it is. Like, oh, I played, you know, you go into an interview, it's like, oh, I was on the diving team. And some guy's like, oh, I was on the diving team too. Wow. Let me tell you about my diving, you know, whatever it is, you know, things like that. But if you can find somebody that's similar to yourself, like go with them. They'll pull for you more.
Yeah. And that's a trick that I used back in the day. And I still do is if I have to meet a person that's new and it's some kind of anything that has to do with work or a job, you look them up on the internet and most physicians have their CV on there and they'll have hobby section and they'll have their background section on there. Yeah. And that's a really good way to know. Like for medicine, for one, you know, if you're interested in one particular specialty or subspecialty, I know, you know, you can always find out what that person did their research posters on or what their interests, clinical interests are. And if it's someone that has a similar clinical interest to you, chances are you have a lot more in common with them. And so that would be another person to target. So I just feel like, you know, there's so many ways to determine if someone is probably like you based on their interest, their CV, which most of that stuff is on the internet.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely some strong points there. Now, I know that you created a lot of study resources for even just medical students, pre-meds, med students, IMGs, and even non-IMGs. Yeah. Can you shed some light on some of your work? Because I think it's really phenomenal what you've done.
Yeah. So when I was, I did a bunch of YouTube videos at the beginning, and some of them were geared towards patients and some of them were just answering questions kind of that I got on social media or whatever. And then I started getting a larger and larger following, and people were like, the basics, like, okay, questions I get are like, how do you get into med school? And how do you study for 8 hours a day? I don't understand stuff. So basically what I tried to do is build a path. Like, so if you're going to start in high school, you gotta go to college. You gotta take the MCAT. You gotta get into, you know, med school. You gotta take the steps. You gotta then get into residency. And so I started back at the beginning. It's like, how do you study? So I built a study course called Study Hackers, studyhackers.com. And it's essentially teaching how I learned and how I stayed, you know, studying 8, 10, 12 hours a day through undergrad and medical school, and mostly kind of like how we build habits, not mostly that, but that's like one of the big ones. I think that's really important. You have to build a habit of studying, and, you know, how do you focus? And, you know, I have a memorization course in there as well, speed reading, and it's a speed reading module, things like that. So that was for the kind of the basics. And then I partnered with a guy named Austin Snyder, who was a Harvard medical student. He did really well in the MCAT and he had a course too. And so we basically, I just helped him build a course to kind of crush the MCAT. That one's called MCATprepacademy.com. He runs that now. And then we did another one for step one, and that is Caleb Leiby, and he's Johns Hopkins resident, ER resident. And he did really well. He got like a 99 on step one. So we did the same thing with him, is we just had him do a ton of videos showing people how to study for step one. And he actually has like a schedule. I think both of them actually have schedules. So you can plug in kind of how many days you have and how many hours a day you can study. And then it gives you like the pages per day in the books that you need to read. It's pretty cool. But
wow, that's detailed.
Yeah, it's super detailed. We actually had like a programmer like set up this software. So it's kind of neat. But yeah, those are the programs we did. Pretty awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. And everyone that's listening, if you want to check out Dr. Parker's YouTube page, he has like over 130,000 subscribers. You can find him on YouTube at parker.com. No, ParkerMD. So we'll have that on the in the show notes as well, so you guys can check it out. And where can IMGs, you know, send some more questions? Sounds like you like answering these questions on the videos.
I get a lot on Instagram. That's fine. You can just direct message me on Instagram. You can. I have an email. It's drbucksinsta@gmail.com. I don't like. I get a lot of messages on Insta. So if I'm not your friend, then I might not see it. So you can email me there.
Okay. All right. We'll have your email in the show notes as well. Just last question we have for you before we let you go is, what is your mantra for success? What is the one thing or two things that you hold on to that have brought you to where you're at today, an attending surgeon, YouTuber, entrepreneur, and probably have several other accolades that I don't know about? Can you share some of your mantras?
They've kind of changed throughout the years there, but I think some of the things that I really stick to all the time is just be authentic, like be yourself. That's probably my number one tip for social media, is to be yourself, be authentic. People really can see if you're, you know, full of crap on and posting bunny rabbits and rainbows. That's junk on social media, as opposed to being super authentic. But I think for school, like kind of like always pick the hard road, I think, in school. Like there's a lot of people that try to shortcut everything. And I just don't feel like you win in the end with that. And so I don't want to say like always pick the hard road, but you, like, you know, it's like always do what's right, what you think is right. I think a lot of times we get in, when I got into residency, it's kind of messed up. When I got into residency, I was always a person who would admit, oh, I screwed up. Like, I'd raise my hand, like, oh, who screwed this up? Like, oh, I screwed this up. That's me. And then in residency, I learned, like, after a while, like, I was going to get fired because everybody was like, it's not me. And I was like, it's me again. And that kind of took, and I was like, oh, crap. And so I stopped doing that and literally stopped kind of owning everything for a while. And then after I finished residency, I was like, well, I'm going to go back to that. that sounds terrible, but, you know, just like own your shit, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm here for all of it. So yeah, that was,
we create our own, I guess I always think you create your own future, you know, your own kind of environment and stuff like that. And so I'm a big believer of also telling people what you want, you know, telling yourself what you want, writing that stuff down and going after it and being authentic at the same time. I think that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I've never met you, but I love your energy and I love your vibe. So we're so happy that you came on the podcast and shared some truth with us, not holding back, clearly. And I wish you the very best, but I'm sure we'll be connecting with you through Instagram and have tons of questions. I know the audience would have tons of questions as well. So thanks for sharing your email with us.
You bet.